There are only two worldviews. Our founders were not ambivalent about which to choose. Philosophies all flow from this choice. That is, either you believe that man created God, or you believe that God created man. And you can go to the philosophy section of any library or any bookstore and just pull down a book and start reading for 3 to 5 pages, and you will immediately know that there are only two worldviews and which one they have chosen. And America's founders said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal, are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. So they explained that our rights come not from who we are, not from the majority. Our rights come from God.
I am in Austin, Texas with my dear friend, Congressman Bob McEwen. Bob, thank you so much for this moment.
Gail, it's such a joy and a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much.
You are one of the most eloquent speakers, but beyond that, it's your brilliance that is overwhelming to me.
Well, speaking is communication, and it's not all physical. It's part spiritual. That is, when you listen to someone, you either identify with them or you don't, and you have a way to reach into people's hearts that they have questions and hurts and seeking for answers and efforts to enlighten their children and friends. And you have a way of communicating that empowers people to do that. And I'm just honored to be with you.
Thank you, Bob. So tell me a little bit about your career, because I find it amazing. And you started so young.
Well, we live in a very, very special place. As I point out, half of all the Nobel Prize winners in the history of the world have been American. Half of all the inventions in the world have been American, more than the rest of the world combined. We're only 4% of the population of the world, but we invent the airplane and the light bulb and the telegraph and the telephone, air conditioning, which I love, the internet. We see all this Facebook and Twitter and all come from a unique place called America. I love it. And I also see what destroys that, and therefore I wanted to battle against it. And there was an effort by the communists in the 50s and 60s to destroy America. And for that reason, I wanted to stand at the ramparts to protect America. And so the best way to do that was in government. And I ran for Congress because I loved America and I hated communism. We were successful in overturning communism. And now we still have the same barbarians at the gate that are committed to destroying our country. And that's why I care so much about politics.
How long have you been in politics?
Well, my wife says that a political gene is a birth defect that can never be cured. And so I delivered literature on my bicycle in the 1964 presidential campaign. I've attended every presidential convention since that time, and vice chairman of the party in our state, and been elected over a couple of decades. So I have always been involved as much as I can remember, and it's a little bit like the mafia. You can't get out of it. People still come and ask for your help, and I gladly give it.
Well, you know, I just wrote a new book called Stuck or Position, It's Your Choice. And Bob, I would say that you have definitely been strategically positioned for this hour. I was so amazed last week when we were together in Atlanta. We were both speaking at the same event. And I watched you in between the breaks mentor young leaders who were discouraged. And I love that you're a statesman for sure. But once you were a young leader, so who mentored you at the beginning?
Well, it was an honor to be with you, as it always is, Gail. People look up to you for encouragement. My wife said one of the greatest things that has been an impact on my life is that she said that you cannot offend her because she chooses not to be offended. I have a little corollary to that, by the way, and that is people who choose to be offended, there's nothing you can do to prevent them from being offended. They will find that it was too hot
so
or too cold
true.
Or too large or too small or too whatever. They'll find something to complain about. And so we can choose not to be offended. And to be with you as you were sharing the encouragement to these young people that when you find bumps in the road, you can decide whether or not this is a showstopper or is a bump. You can decide, and that's where the spirituality comes in. The belief that things just happened to you and therefore you should stop because there was nothing you could do about it, that's just your lot in life. That is nonsense. The fact is God has positioned us for, the scripture says he doesn't allow anything to overtake us but what he doesn't provide a way of escape. That is, we have the capacity to work around. Let me give this example. My brother said, suppose you have a sandbox and there's a large ant in one corner and you want the ant to go to the far corner. And so the ant starts rumbling around as he does, but you take some cardboard and you shove the sand up so that he has to slide around and he goes another direction. Then he goes down. Then you take the cardboard and you push it up a pile there and he slides down. Eventually, you get him clear up into the far corner. Now, if you put a microphone under his nose and say, how did you get from that corner clear over here? Well, let me just tell you, I had lots of trouble when I just went another direction. And when things didn't go well, I just got up early in the morning. And he would just be so proud of himself as to what he did. But he didn't understand that there was someone guiding that all along as he was doing it. Now, we believe that we were made for a purpose. God made us with talents and skills that no one else has. In the history of the planets, no one has ever had the skills, the talents, the capacity to be a husband, a wife, a daughter, a sister, a neighbor that God has built into each one of us.
So
now,
true.
With that understanding, he then guides us to do things. Now, we can, when we reach the struggle, we can say, everything was fine until this, and then we quit. That's not scriptural. God doesn't like that a whole lot. That when things come our way and everyone has the bumps, we have to decide, are we going to follow him or are we going to sit in our puddle? Your book is such an inspiration to bring forth the truth that God does not allow anything to come our way that doesn't first pass through his hands. And even though we think in the short run that can't be good, but all things work together for good.
So true. Such a key. You know, stuck in position are the same place. It's just really about your attitude and your outlook.
Exactly.
So what have you experienced over the years being a politician? I mean, sometimes people love you and most of the time they don't like you, right?
Well, the biggest thing for me was that I had only envisioned myself as being in elected office. That's all I wanted to do as a teenager. And so I ran at the first opportunity. I was in college at the time, in law school, and the state representative who had come into the grocery store where I worked when I was in high school, and we would talk politics. He would just stand there and follow me around as I was stocking shelves, and we would talk politics. And I always explained to him that the day would come when he wanted to give up that seat and I wanted to run for it. Well, Watergate came, and it was going to be a really, really bad year, and he just decided he wasn't going to go, and I was still in college. And he called to apologize for the fact that he couldn't hold on another. He was just going to quit, and that obviously would foreclose my options. And I said, whoa, no. No, he only grabbed this ring when it's coming around. I'm not going to sit and wait another term. And he said, well, he didn't think that was wise, but nevertheless, I quit law school, ran for office, and then enjoyed that for the next 20 years. But then the time came that my district was totally destroyed politically. It was done by intentionally. It took my little town of 5,000, put it in with the city of Dayton. It's been represented by the city of Dayton by the mayor of the city of Dayton, which is 80% of the vote. There was just the whole thing was just destroyed. That appeared to me to be unfair, unwise, and disappointing. But the fact is, the Lord cannot move you to the next place unless he closes the first place.
And great point.
I go through it with my son. He was looking for a job, and he would get all excited about a job, and he would do interviews, and it looked like it would fit perfectly, and the interview went well, and all that. And then they come back and say no, and he would feel so let down. And I explained to him, I said, you know, Robert, you need to understand, if the Lord wants you to go through door number 7, there is only one way that he can get you to door number 7.
Close.
He has to close door number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5. Because the second
Great
you go in
point.
Door number 5, you'll never get to door number 7 where he wants you to be, where you'll be best, where it'll be best for you, and you'll flourish. So understand that you're not stuck here. You don't just sit down, I missed it. No. You're positioned in order to be what God wanted you to be. And now it's up to you. It's your responsibility. He's given you these talents and skills. And what are you going to do? Sit on the bench and say, woe is me? Or are you going to take it and become all that God intended for you to have? And which, in conclusion, I know I'm taking all your time, Gail, but it's so fun to be with you. You're such an inspiration to so many of us. The Bible verse that Liz and I had on our program when we got married is the Living Translation in Romans 5:8. It says, for because of our faith, he has brought us into this place of highest privilege where we now stand. Yet we confidently and joyfully look forward to actually becoming all that he has had in mind for us to be. And so the fact is that we're happy where we are and we're doing it, but our real goal is to grow and to prosper and to become what God designed for us.
So Bob, how many nations have you traveled to?
Well, I don't know. I'm not quite as many as my wife, over 100, I think, but we... periodically we see these places where you should go, and we click down through them, and it's hard for us to find a place we haven't been. So the Lord has blessed us in that respect. We both love to travel, and as I say, my wife keeps a suitcase and a passport by the door at all times in case of emergencies. I was privileged, as I said, I got involved in politics because of my contempt for communism, and to be elected with a president, Ronald Reagan, who was, we shared that commitment. And we've been friends for years in advance, and he would send me to places such as Central America when we were supporting the Contras, when they were defunded, and I would sleep with them out in the jungle, and they would hook up a PA, and I'd say, someday you and I will walk arm in arm down the streets of a free Managua in Nicaragua. I didn't know if that was going to be true or not, but I wanted to encourage him, and I was hopeful that we
could.
Wow. And I was in the Polish Sejm the day that First Nation voted a non-communist leader of a communist country. And I knew that unlike where the tanks rolled in 56 in Hungary and put down the uprising, in Czechoslovakia in 68 when they put down the Prague Spring, I knew that if they allowed Poland to choose a non-communist leader in 1989, that either they would kill that guy or communism would, the dominoes would go. And so I escorted him into the chancellery. He had never been there before.
Amazing.
I said, this is just the beginning. It will sweep throughout Central and Eastern Europe and not stop until it reaches the heart of the very Kremlin itself. And so that was in August. By September and October, the dominoes went. The wall came down on November 9th, just 2.5 months later. And then a year and a half later, I was in the Kremlin the day the Soviets voted to eliminate the Soviet Union in the Kremlin. I was the only American that was there. And so it, the Lord has not only given me the privilege, it's given me a blessing to do what I always love to do.
Strategically positioned for this hour. And the other thing that I love about you, and I know there's no time to go into this, but you have books written on this, are you know how to teach people about economics in such a way that they understand it. They get it.
It's not accidental that on one side of the river you have poverty, and on the other side of the river you have abundance. It can't be the ground, can't be the sky, can't be the weather. It has to be something. And what it is, it's economics. And so when you take the richest city in the world, the history of mankind, Detroit, Michigan, and turn it into the poorest city in North America, you need to understand how that happens, because if you understand it, and it's not complicated, you can make any rich place poor or any poor place rich, and that's what politics is all about. And it's, I repeat, the drug dealer on the street corner understands it. You have to have a supply, you have to demand, you have to serve your customers, and you have to have a profit. And if government comes along and denies any of those things to a business, it does, can't get its supply, can't get to its market, or can't take a profit, you will have, you'll be out of business. That's what we want to do to the drug dealer. Unfortunately, government's doing it to the auto dealer.
I know you're the opening speaker for a meeting that's about to happen in a moment, but what is your ultimate wish for America for this hour?
Well, it's to understand its roots. Nothing is more sad than talking to a person who's lost their memory. They don't know you, and they don't know their children, and they don't know, and it's just sad. And a nation that loses its memory becomes very sad. America has the greatest history in the world. It has brought, it did something that no one else had ever done. People wrote about it for 300 years, that individuals, just because of who they were, made in God's image, that they would be able to judge for themselves. But nobody had ever done it. Everyone had been a baron or a king or a monarch or something. The idea that anybody could do it. And so America started that idea and then incorporated free enterprise. Now it's swept the globe. Most of it throughout Western Hemisphere is virtually all democratically elected. An idea that began in Philadelphia. Now we have extracted that from our schools. We now have people wandering around that cannot tell you anything about our history. We're just in, recently now they're trying to change the bills to put people who were demonstrators, who were political activists, to replace the founders of this great place. So what do I want for America? I wanted to understand its unique place in history and embrace it so that there will still be an example of refuge for the rest of the world when totalitarianism, which brings its head up continually all the time throughout all recorded history, whether it be barbarians in Rome or anywhere else, that when that comes at America, we understand what made us great. That's my prayer.
Do you think we can return to that?
I don't think there's any question we can return it. If we have the proper leadership, this country could be restored. I'll just tell you, economically, America could be energy independent. We don't need to spend billions of dollars abroad. We have the highest taxes. That is, if you go into business, we take more money out of your till than you get to have. And if we lower the taxes to just competitive with other nations, Europe and Asia, this nation would explode in production. It's very simply fixed economically. Then we also have to have a spiritual enlightenment. And I see on the horizon a series of people who understand or are outspoken about the spiritual heritage of America that I have never seen in my lifetime. And so we're on the cusp of real opportunity.
And before we stop, you say something that is so profound every time I hear you say it. There's two decisions to make about God.
There are only two worldviews.
And thank you.
Our founders were not ambivalent about which to choose. And it's two ways that you look at everything, and philosophies all flow from this choice. That is, either you believe that man created God, or you believe that God created man. And you can go to the philosophy section of any library or any bookstore and just pull down a book and start reading for 3 to 5 pages. And you will immediately know that there are only two worldviews and which one they have chosen. And America's founders said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Among those are life. So they explained that our rights come not from who we are, not from the majority. Our rights come from God.
Honorable Bob McEwen, thank you so much for the honor to be with you today.
Oh, Gail, it's my privilege.
You are the best.
Thank you so much. Love you.
Thank you for your voice. Feeling stuck? Feeling like there's more, but you don't know how to get there? May I suggest an incredible encouragement? Stuck or positioned, it's your choice. And what's great, it's also in an audio version. Just go to GailMcWilliams.com/tools.